You're listening to the Fargo Podcast with Jeremiah and Mike.
Oh, yeah?
A podcast dedicated to the FX television show Fargo.
He says, is this what you want?
I think that, sir, is the sound of opportunity knocking.
So put that ice scraper down and enjoy the show.
There you go, now you see it. The inescapable reality. You're trapped.
Hello and welcome back everyone to Fargo with Jeremiah and Mike. My name is Jeremiah.
My name is Mike.
Hello, Mike. How's it going, my friend?
You know, Jeremiah, from the very beginning, I was relatively happy that my last name was not Stussy, but now I am praying to the named gods that be and my ancestors on Ellis Island that they never changed it, because apparently being a Stussy can get you collateral damage in a certain deathly manner.
Right, and we found that out right away at the top of this episode where we see what Varga's plan was to get Mr. Emmett out as quickly as possible. You definitely don't want that name, especially it looks like if you're living in the St. Cloud, Minnesota area for sure. I mean, that's bad news right there.
Yeah, but I think we need some sort of etymologist or somebody who knows a lot about genealogy. You know, maybe all of these Stussies did come from some sort of central ancestor, because it is pretty strange. I don't think Stussy is that common of a last name. I might be incorrect in that regard, but this idea that Stussy is essentially the Smith of the Midwest is something that I did not know about before watching this season of Fargo, apparently.
It seems like the little bit I've heard from people that are from the Minnesota area, you know, it is kind of a common name, but I don't know if it would go as far as saying Smith. And I really doubt that there is that many Stussies living in the St. Cloud, Minnesota area. I think that we're definitely talking about some creative liberties here as far as that's concerned. But I don't know, maybe we're wrong. Maybe if there's some people that live in the Minnesota area that can correct us here in this particular logic. But I just can't imagine there being that many. But it works great for the episode, and they're having a lot of fun with it. And I don't stress too much about it. But yeah, they're apparently, in this universe, at least, Mike, there's quite a few Stussies, apparently.
Yeah, it's almost as if, you know, they were all piling into a car and screaming Stussy rules before Varga provides the banana peel that makes that car slip off a cliff.
Exactly. Well, obviously, in this episode, we are talking about the 9th episode of Season 3. We are recording a little bit later. I will apologize about that. I have come down with a cold, Mike, out here.
Don't drink the tea,
California.
Jeremiah. Don't drink any tea anybody offers you.
I would never. I don't care if it is your mother's homemade recipe. I stick to Lipton tea myself, sir. I don't think I could trust anything, especially if it's coming from Varga, which, by the way, thank goodness Miss Swango was smart enough to know not to drink anything this man puts in front of you.
Well, I mean, I think we could sort of just stop the sentence there and then say, thank God Miss Swango was smart enough, and sort of apply that to the entirety of this episode, because we got a lot of answers as to what happened to her and Mr. Wrench in the 3 months that passed since last we left them. And we moved the chains forward a bit as well. Now, I'm interested to know from you, Jeremiah. You spoke last time about how the penultimate episode of each Fargo season, much like a lot of prestige TV dramas these days, seems to be one of the big climactic moments of the season. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe season one was, you know, the big episode where we see, you know, Lorne Malvo's, you know, rise and fall as the dentist. And we see Lester kind of, you know, freak out and start to get cornered and really be in desperation mode. Season right. two penultimate episode was the massacre at Sioux Falls. And that was probably the most polarizing episode in Fargo history, with the possible Deus Ex Machina of an extraterrestrial being showing up at the very end.
Yeah,
all
the ET episode.
That occurred. Uh-huh. Yeah, but in comparison to those, this was much
totally
simpler.
Opposite. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very simple. Due to that change in tone from what we've seen erstwhile on Fargo, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, actually, I really did enjoy this quite a bit. More so because this really surprised the heck out of me, because it was more about development, more of our characters than I would have ever expected. We had some fantastic scenes. Not only, probably my favorite is the same one that Brendan Fitzpatrick had, which of course was at the bar with Gloria and Winnie. And it was just so beautiful, but we were able to learn so much about our characters. And I think that that was really made, which made this episode really good. I don't know if necessarily it is the best of this particular season. I know some people kind of feel that way, just because of the, like I said, the development of, that we have of all these characters. Some of this, especially with Winnie and Gloria, I was hoping to see more of this, you know, a few episodes back. I mean, so getting some of these things that we've been kind of wanting, which great. And I don't necessarily have to have everything about, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 different people dying. Although technically we did have some deaths here. I mean, at least for sure for the Stussies. I mean, you know, we lost two more Stussies for sure. And, but you know, it, but, and we did have a very, a little tension there built up, of course, with the great, showdown, shall we say, between, Varga and Miss Nikki, but outside of that, I mean, yeah, it was a very simple episode, and but I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well written, and I think it was some pretty good television to watch. What about you, Mike? Did you really enjoy it?
Yeah, just to sort of piggyback on what you said, I know last episode I kind of nitpicked the season a bit in saying that I felt like a lot of our main characters really did not have... I don't want to use the term death, because I don't necessarily believe that Fargo's goal is to sculpt out these three-dimensional figures. Like I said at the very beginning of our podcasting experience, I do feel like Fargo does draw with a lot of broad lines in terms of who is good and who is evil. But even though these characters may have one color, I feel like the great stuff that comes with the characterizations of Fargo are just the shades of them. And we see this throughout the course of Fargo, where these characters might lie on the good or evil ends of the spectrum, but they're so interestingly enough shaded and characterized that you're drawn into them. And like you said, I feel like this episode, we finally got the, you know, the paint swatch out that we picked up from the local Home Depot, and now we're finally starting to shade these characters, and specifically Gloria and Emmett, who have been two characters that we've really been following from the beginning. We have found out so much about specifically their own inner workings, and I'm sure we're going to get to it, obviously, but it's so nice to finally explore the psychologies of these main characters who have really just sort of, you know, been there to serve as parts of the plot for the past 8 episodes. That being said, I do agree with you that, you know, in a perfect world, maybe it would have been nice to have some of these characterization moments before, but I'm also of the mentality of better late than never. Well, it was sort of a step away from what they usually do with the penultimate episode. I really enjoyed it for those character moments and for this really excellent showdown between Nikki and Varga. And just this idea that we are really setting things up for the finale. And it's really interesting also tracking what I'm going to assume is going to be Varga's eventual fall, where unlike someone like Malvo, it's not going to happen over the course of one episode. It seems like ever since we made this time jump, Varga has been slowly losing control of his operation. And this episode is one big major step in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And we will definitely dig a lot into that. We can go ahead and we could start a little bit talking a little bit more about what we got from Emmett and Gloria, because, you know, I know the episode, of course, does open with the scene with the first Stussy that gets murdered. Marvin Stussy, apparently, gets his throat slashed. By the way, I did love that shot with the blood in the milk. Yeah, and I know some people kind of refer to it kind of like what we were used to seeing, blood in with the white from the snow. But in this case, was the with the milk. I thought it was a nice touch. The angle that they had it, and just the way they captured that with the red and the white. It looked really cool, I thought. Did you agree? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's also a nice possible shout out to the area that they're in. I know that they're in Minnesota, but I feel like that's a hop, skip, and a jump from Wisconsin, which I know is like dairy country. So I think it's a nice symbol of like, you know, blood runs through us. and through Fargo as much as Milk does. I think that's a nice representation of that idea.
Yeah, and I do think, though, Marvin Stussy had an issue with those sprinklers, because I understand the concept of the sprinkler and to turning on, but you know, when you still have quite a bit of icy snow on your lawn, I don't know, is that, maybe there's a technique there that helps melt it faster? I need maybe someone that lives in the far north that has more experience dealing with longer, colder weather than I'm used to, but that just seemed a little off. Was that more of just a joke there on the Stussies that they're just all maybe not there?
I don't know. I mean, it's also, let's remember, this is mid-March. Some climates in mid-March is when spring weather starts to show. I think, as you said, though, the sprinkler is going off. The snow does seem to be melted, which, again, might have some symbology. You know, Yuri gives that big monologue in, I think, episode 5 about this idea of, like, oh, I love snow because it covers up all the blood on the ground, or, you know, something along those lines. And so maybe it's sort of saying that any sort of guise that's hiding the violence and bloodshed that permeates throughout this area is now eroding, or it could just be, as you said, the mismanagement of a sprinkler system.
One or the other, but yeah. But we move right into this interview Gloria has with Emmett, the Stussy that we do care about. And not only does Emmett, of course, pretty much confess to killing his brother, but it gets much deeper than that, doesn't it, Mike? I mean, he basically spells everything out to Gloria about how essentially he's been slowly killing him for 30 years. I love the line, 30 years I've been killing him. That was just when he fell. Wow, what a line. I mean, we learned so much. We also learned, of course, a little bit more about the details as far as, you know, how he was able to get the stamps over the vet, and how, in a way, he tricked his brother into wanting the vet. Now, then again, I thought it was interesting how he talked about how the vet was pretty much a magnet for girls, and that, you know, Ray was definitely someone who probably needed a little help in the area when it comes to picking up ladies. So, you know, I think at the time you would think that Ray really did feel like he was winning, and maybe, you know, I don't know if Emmett should feel so terrible about it. I mean, it was probably a good thing for a long time for a 15-year-old Ray to have a beautiful Corvette, right?
Well, he's 15. He can't really drive it, can he? I don't know what the driving law. I mean, I guess that was, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that might have been in the 70s. I don't know when they raised when they changed the driving age, if at all. But
he was on the crest of. I mean, like, I think 16 at least. So like a year later, I think he would have been able to drive.
He'd have a learner's permit, and then, you know, he doesn't really have a responsible adult to drive around with, considering that responsible adult is now face down in the middle of their driveway. So I don't know. It might have looked beautiful in their driveway, but oh, I mean, this was a fantastic way to start the episode for so many reasons. First, yeah, I know we highlighted Ewan McGregor's dual performance as the brothers faced off against each other in Ray's ultimate death a few episodes ago. But Ewan McGregor doing Emmett's breakdown here was so fantastic, because Emmett really is a character that we've gotten to know the past few episodes. This is someone who, I mean, I don't know if even after this monologue we can call him an inherently good person, but I feel like he's innocent enough in that this is something that has beleaguered him for a very long time. And this idea has been brought up since the very first episode when, you know, Emmett and Cy pull Ray aside at the party at his house and say, you know, Ray's asking for money, and Emmett's saying, you know, Ray's accusing Emmett of jipping him out of the car. And mm-hmm. Emmett, in his brother's death, maybe that was the final pushing point. He finally admits to, yeah, he ended up doing that. And I think he's sort of just been grief-stricken by this idea that, you know, he is capable of doing these things. He can't really separate himself from a personal standpoint of all the ludicrously insane things that Varga and his men are doing in partnership with Emmett, because Emmett feels like, you know, I am guilty of doing these things too. It's so fascinating just watching Emmett sort of talk it out, and also know, again, like you said, filling in these puzzle pieces, you wonder, you know, why was Emmett loaning Ray so much money through the years? You know, was this, you know, just through the kindness of his heart? But I feel like part of it was through guilt.
Mm-hmm.
I feel
no, like it was. I agree.
Emmett definitely felt like, you know, this could help sort of pay off the guilt that's been weighing on my heart. But I'm going to assume that after a portion of time, he realizes, you know, I can't do that. Compounding debt when in a financial crisis, and he realizes that, you know, this is unfortunately one of the losses he has to cut. Now, on top of all of this, we once again tie this all back into the idea of truth and stories. Emmett brings up this line, a lie is not a lie until you believe it's true. Do you believe that? And Laurie just replies, that's not my story. Which I think is just a nice microcosm of the two big themes in this season together. It was a real showcase for both Ewan McGregor and Emmett Stussy's character. I have no idea what the final episode is going to have in store for him, but this is like the pinnacle Emmett moment for me, where we truly find out the inner machinations of this man ever since he was a teenager bartering away a car for, you know, very high value stamps.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how he was like, he goes, can you believe it? A 17-year-old boy and he wanted stamps over a vet. But, you know, I think that just kind of tells you that, you know, Emmett was a smart kid. I mean, he, you know, we've used the term dumb for poor Ray, but, you know, it's just one of those things. Some people have insight, you know, just, you're just kind of born with it. You know, for Ray, I'm sure they had a Corvette sounded like way better than stupid stamps. But, you know, Emmett shouldn't apologize necessarily, but I understand why he feels so bad. You know, I get that. But, you know, in the end, you know, you really can't apologize for the fact that you were, you know, wise enough to like realize, you know, I think the stamps have more value than the vet, you know. And it just watching this and hearing everything he said makes me think so differently that about how I felt about Emmett before the, you know, beginning of the episode than I do now. And that's what was so beautiful about this whole thing. And it's been building up. It's not just a scene. We've kind of seen a lot of it, especially ever since, of course, the passing when Ray does die. We've been kind of building into this point where you could tell how this is just eating up Emmett so badly, to the point where he goes to the police station and says, hey, I want to confess. I mean, he needed to confess so much more than just what had happened that caused Ray to die. He wanted to confess everything to Glory. And I felt like it was something he just had to do, and he did it. And I think it was beautiful. And I have to admit, Mike, it just, not to go so too deep with it, but it kind of makes me think a little bit about my relationship with my own brother, because, you know, now that we're adults, we don't have necessarily the same relationship. And I'm not saying I'm imminent in this situation, but I feel like I'm kind of imminent in this situation, because our paths have been very different. And he's had a lot more struggles, shall we say, than I have. And I have a lot more than he does and things like that. So it kind of actually, this whole brother feud thing between the two of them has made me think about me and my brother as well, which is kind of interesting, you know?
Who would have thought actual real life lessons would be taken from this show?
And it's not that it's something I haven't thought about, because I have, but it just kind of like, I look at it and I go, yeah, that's kind of interesting. And it just made me think a lot about my own personal relationship with my brother. So it's very fascinating. But yes, I care a lot about Emmett. And I don't know about you, but I really do want to see him come out of this thing. I want to see him kind of come out of this okay. I don't know how that's going to happen. It doesn't look very good for him. But I'd love to see some way he come out of this okay. Maybe there's a way.
I mean, I think even for Emmett at this point, going to jail would be okay. I think, you know, at this point, Emmett has sort of confessed his sins in a way, so I feel like even him going to prison is him receiving penance and saying, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be for Ray's death. I would assume it might be like, I don't know, accidental murder, or it might be affiliated with the financial situation, which is now sort of going to get blown open considering what Nikki sent to the IRS by the end of this episode. But I don't think this is going to end with both Stussy brothers dead, but I don't know. I mean, season two ended with basically the entire Gerhardt clan dead. So I don't think we're necessarily sticking to a hard and fast rule that, you know, not all family members will get wiped up. A couple other things about this scene that I wanted to bring up briefly. First was, I believe Emmett used the term exsanguinate, or was it Gloria who used the term exsanguinate to talk about his relationship with Ray? Exsanguination, for those of you that don't know, is the act of draining a person or an animal of blood. And I feel like it's like a big kind of hunting term, but again, it's a really interesting representation of how Emmett sort of feels like his relationship with Ray was. It felt like he was sort of hunting Ray for the past some odd years, and he was never killing Ray. He was just letting him bleed out, you know, drag his leg throughout the woods. But, you know, unlike Yuri and DJ Qualls pursuing Nikki and Wrench last episode, Emmett incidentally found his target and struck at the very end. The final thing I want to talk about, we always highlight certain elements of cinematography in Fargo. The shot of this scene, it's super simple. Mm-hmm. They're in the interview room, but this idea that, you know, they're in front of a mirror, whether it's a one-way mirror or a two-way mirror, I'm not entirely sure. If they were back in the library, it would have just been probably, I don't know, the romance stack or something. But this idea that because of the way it's shot, since they're in front of a mirror, there's an effect that makes it look like they're in, you know, an infinite hall of mirrors.
Yeah, I love that. I wrote that in my notes, too. I thought it was a great shot.
Yeah, and it's just, again, really very representative of the fact that Emmett is finally holding a mirror up to himself, mm-hmm. really examining who he is, what his motives were, and what his motives are, and is now finally coming clean with that image.
Right, and then we get similar kind of images, too, later on. We'll talk about it with Gloria and looking at herself in the mirror in the bathroom and how, you know, things change for her, which we will definitely talk about that. But, yeah, I love that, Mike. That's good stuff and so true. And I wrote that on my shots. It was one of those shots that stood out that was just so perfectly done. And this is just something that Fargo has always done a really nice job with their cinematographers and their directors. In this case, the director was Keith Gordon, who's been a very busy man. I noticed that Sepinwall had talked about how he's done three of my favorite shows now. He's done Fargo, he's done Better Call Saul, and he's done The Leftovers. So he's been very busy with this spring, which those are, like I said, those are my three favorite dramas that have been on at this current moment, obviously. He's a busy guy. But I think that the directors and the cinematographers, everybody works so nicely in Fargo to give us, to make this show look beautiful all the time. So that's something you can never argue with. And this was another great example of it.
Yeah, and it makes sense that this guy worked on Breaking Bad was about to get to a big truck heist in the next scene.
Yeah, exactly. We get to see the beginnings here that Swango and Wrench had a very detailed plan, obviously. They've been working this out. We've been wondering what they've been up to for the last 3 months, right, with the time jump. Well, apparently they have been doing their own spying and investigating on Varga and his team because they really seem to know what they were doing with this hijacking of the truck, down to even a fake grenade and everything. It was so masterfully done. It was great. And in the end, seeing Mimo's reaction as he gets back to Varga at the office, going, he looks so disheveled. He just looked, I don't even, the headphones aren't even in his ears. You could, you know, Varga knew immediately, something went wrong. I mean, it was just great. So let's talk about anything that really stood out about this sequence, other than the fact that they, like I said, they definitely had been really working out exactly what they were going to do and when to hit and everything, right?
Yeah, this is so interesting because, again, let's remember the last time that we left them was, again, if we are to believe the literal interpretation of that bowling alley scene from last episode, Nikki has now been given a mission from God, essentially, to exact revenge upon Varga and his men for what he has, you know, done with the series of events that led to Ray's death, her beating, her arrest, etc. And, you know, now that she has Mr. Wrench, who, let's remember, Lauren Malvo gave a lot of kudos to, saying, you were the closest person to ever come to, you know, essentially bringing me down. I think it shows that even without Mr. Numbers, he's still a very capable hitman and a very capable man to figure out a meticulous plan. And so between the two of them, they're able to really carry this out, just the two of them, which is super interesting considering that there were, what, three guys or four guys involved there. They're all criminals in some sort of way, shape, or form. I do wonder if Yuri had been there, you know, would Yuri have jumped out of the truck as quickly as Mima would have? Or is Yuri just crazy enough that he would have grabbed the grenade and realized it was a paperweight?
This is a good point. I do think that that team is really missing the hand of Yuri. I think he definitely added a lot to what they had going on, and he is definitely missed. And I think now, by the way, I think we can safely say that he did go to the afterlife. And obviously, he did not leave the spiritual bowling alley that we that we witnessed. I think we is safe to say that, right? At this point, I mean, I think we said that last week, but I think now, not even hearing his name mentioned, if I recall, I don't believe that his name was mentioned. I could think of, and I think it's safe to say that he's dead somewhere in the woods, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it would say, again, depending on how you would interpret things, I think he's definitely moved on. I feel like even at the end of last episode, they sort of said, like, you left your, you know, associate behind. I also say, going back to this scene, I don't know if this was the Numbers and Wrench drum music, but it was drum music, which, again, is very much in line with, you know, the Numbers and Wrench theming that we've had since season one. But, yeah, I think this is, again, the first big step in, you know, Nikki's strike against Varga, which, again, like, so interestingly in almost perpendicular to the fact that Varga is carrying out one of his trademark seamless plans otherwise with the, you know, the double homicide of the Stussies and really throwing the trail off of Emmett purposefully. But at the same time, he seems to be flustering when dealing with Nikki and Wrench. The one other question that I do have for you, Jeremiah, is, you know, we wondered last time if Wrench was helping Nikki out merely just because of convenience, considering that they were bound together quite literally. Do you think that Wrench has some sort of financial stake in this? Do you think he wants to support Nikki for some reason? Why do you think he stuck around for the next 3 months to help her?
I mean, it's a great question, and I did think about that. I was like, oh, he is still with her. I mean, maybe it's because, I don't know, you know, maybe he looks at Nikki as his new, you know, Mr. Numbers. And he has a thing, and he just wants to work. He wants to work with. He wants to get help this girl get revenge. Maybe it's more of just, hey, I'm along for the ride. I want to help you make this thing happen. I don't know if what he has in tight. I mean, I think it's safe to say we all know they're not probably going to get any money necessarily out of Varga. I mean, it's clear to me he's not going to give in. So it's really just they're basically just going to take this guy down. And for some reason, yeah, he's all in. He is all in. And I think it's great. And I love seeing this too. And you are correct. That was the original, you know, Jeff Russo's original theme that he wrote for Numbers of Wrench. I mean, that's the same one. And that's kind of what we've been told here is that these two are now the new Numbers of Wrench, and they've got this plan, and they're seeing it through. And what he gets out of this, I don't really quite know. Maybe we'll find out something in the finale, but I don't know. Well, maybe he just has a crush on her. I mean, I'd have a crush on Miss Swango. I just think she was even hotter after this episode. So
I mean, Nikki does know the number 58 octillion off the top of her head.
Yeah,
so she
that's
must
pretty
be
impressive.
Miss Numbers in that regard.
And don't forget the human factor. Don't forget the
yes,
human
don't,
factor.
Yes, don't forget the human factor. My favorite off-brand NBC reality show. I mean, I will also say, again, this will be a nice forebearing for what we talk about with the Nikki Varga stuff for the rest of the episode. But in my opinion, Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Nikki Swango, I love me some Carrie Coon. I've said that many times over the course of many podcasts. But I feel like Nikki was the character of this season. From the beginning, she really captivated me. She really showed, and the show was able to really have her become this three-dimensional character so early on. So I am so invested in her success in the show. Hopefully that doesn't mean like a horrifying defeat in the final episode, but both Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the character has me so invested, and it makes me so excited to watch her over the course of this episode really get one over on Varga multiple times, including in this next scene when, you know, this isn't the first time that she's trying to extort someone for money, but she seems more confident now.
Yeah, way more confident. That's what I wrote in my notes, Mike, during this conversation that she does have with Varga right off the bat on the phone is, I like this. I like this Swango. I like this Nikki. She's way more confident she's ever been. I mean, like I said, I wrote, she's a girl on a mission. She's on a mission, like you said, a mission from God, and I love it. And I just think that, you know, she's definitely grown even more. And I'm telling you, there's no doubt in my mind they're going to be successful in this thing and taking him down. But I loved the expression that Varga had right after he got off the phone with her. David's work, I know we can't stand this character because of his disgusting nature, especially with his mouth and things he does with food and afterwards, but Wow, David is so great, and this was just a gem of expression, and we get so many of them from him, but I really enjoyed it, and it was just really great to see that play out, and it gets even better when we get to the hotel, and they have their little one-on-one, which was mm-hmm. phenomenal, so we'll talk about that, but what else did you come up with this conversation between the two of them? Anything else?
Not really. I mean, I think, again, this is really where we start to watch Vargas squirm a little bit, as you're sort of mentioning. I mean, he does his typical Vargas shtick at the beginning of like, oh, you know, it's lazy to steal from someone without knowing their name. And then Nikki, you know, just pulls one over him and says like, hey, look, I have all your financial information. You know, I have your bank routing numbers. And so Vargas realizes this is a very serious case. It is really interesting. I feel like, and the Peter and the Wolf comparison really doubled down on this. I think we had assumed the entire time that in true Fargo fashion, the cop was going to take down the criminal. That mm-hmm. Gloria was really going to be the one, the singular person to bring Varga down. Now, she still might, especially now that she sort of has her groove back by the end of this episode. But I'm surprised at how much Varga's really being deterred by Nikki. From at the beginning of the season, I would not have assumed that she would have become his worst enemy.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And I like this because, and maybe it's just because there's not a Salverson involved, you know, but, you know, I think this is the idea of the other, and I don't, you know, again, I don't know if I want to call Nikki necessarily a major criminal, but, you know, the idea that she's going to be the one probably to take him out completely. And don't get me wrong, Gloria and Winnie will be involved. I'm just saying, and obviously it looks like the IRS, but, just, because of her actions, is going to take this another to the level that is most likely going to be taking him out. I think this is just great stuff. And you're right, it's not something we're used to. We are used to, you know, law enforcement, you know, taking the big guys out. So I think this is nice. A nice mm-hmm. chase. I mean, that's the thing that Noah Hawley's been struggling with is, you know, is making small changes here and there to try to make these series feel a little different from season to season, and whatever he's got to do is great, and this is another one of them. It's something else to take us by surprise, and this is great. So I really enjoy him.
Absolutely.
Now, we do learn pretty quickly that it's probably not a good idea to wear a Cargan sweater into your when you get arrested. You might
Why
want...
not? That's how you make friends.
Is that how you make friends? Maybe, you know, I never thought about that. Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, well, never mind. Forget what I just said. now, we do, of course, the story gets pushed along a little bit. We find out that, of course, Gloria gets a phone call from... Oh, no, Gloria calls Winnie, and, of course, mm-hmm. she fills her in, of course, about what happened with this Marvin Stussy. And of course, Gloria is more interested as far as what happened with the Goldfarb interview. Anything, I don't know necessarily we could take from that, because then later on we move into Gloria having burgers with her son, which was, you know, nice touching moment. Anything that kind of came out of that exchanges there? I definitely want to dig more into the Goldfarb thing when we get to her, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if there's really much came from these scenes necessarily.
No, not really. I mean, I do wonder if Nathan and Gloria eating the burgers are a callback to the movie when I believe it's Molly Salverson and her husband are eating Arby's. We had the Arby's callback earlier on in the season, but I think they were just eating burgers in the station. So maybe, you know, Nathan is sort of serving as her man in that regard. And we see a tiny bit of strain on their relationship, just an ounce, but still an interesting sort of strain when, you know, she says, oh, let's go canoeing. Nathan says, oh, I kind of rather go to the mall with my friend. So I think, you know, Gloria is going to express at the end of this episode that she feels very alone. And I think this is a nice sort of small representation about how she feels like even her inner circle is sort of starting to pull away from her as the nucleus of this atom.
Yeah, no, I like that. And then I didn't really think much about it when I was watching that scene, but I think this makes a lot of sense to me, and I think that definitely it goes very well with the series. And yeah, I'm buying that. That sounds good to me. I like it.
Let's put it to bed.
Exactly. Well, Donnie and Chief Mo are called to the scene for the next Stussy murder this time. Stussy.
Did you miss Chief Mo, Jeremiah? One episode, I did. Chief Mo, was that enough?
Oh man, it was so great to see him again. He was in full action here. We really got to see Mike, the mind of Chief Mo. You know, like, I mean, I know he's a simple man. You know, potatoes, mashed potatoes to mashed potatoes, but he was able to prove it with his detective skills. After finding out about this murder of George Stussy, how he's able to really put together the pieces so easily, you know, with the glass and the shard glass and the cutting the throat, you know, and then oh how convenient a maroon Cadillac spinning off at the scene and was able to track down this car. It was just so brilliant to see his mind working so quickly. I mean, even Donnie couldn't keep up with what he was trying to say. I
was impressed. Saying much. I love Donnie and all, but yeah, I mean, this is Chief Mo is a man who essentially shaves with Occam's razor in that he always thinks, as you said, the simplest solution is the best. Now, I wouldn't say that necessarily the tale that Vargas spins through these murders is necessarily the simplest solution, that a man who was sexually molested by someone named Stussy when he was a kid now has a vendetta and is going out to murder men named Stussy in the area through two different methods is fairly complicated. But the extenuating circumstances of Fargo Season 3 are complicated in itself, that I guess you need an equally complicated narrative to sort of balance things out. But, I mean, put yourself in Chief Mo's shoes here, Jeremiah. I mean, do you, I know we've sort of been bashing on him, especially the past few episodes, as he's sort of been in consternation against Gloria, but I mean, do you sort of see it from his perspective here? I mean, these are the details really falling into his lap nice and easily. Do you think he really has a right to question them and say, no, let's sort of go down Gloria's seemingly more cockamamie route about how it was multiple people involved?
Well, you know, the thing is, sure, I could see, knowing what I know about this person, yes, I totally understand where he's coming from. I mean, the thing is, though, Gloria still was bringing up lots of great points, though, about mm-hmm. to still question it. And, you know, I did want to talk about really the whole picture. I want to talk a little bit about, too, about the fact that Varga came up with this whole plan. And I went back to, do you remember the line about what he said about one of the things he loves about the Midwest is how simple-minded people are? And he said it in a very condescending way, and I mentioned that during that particular podcast. And what I think is that I think Varga knows that all I need to do to get all the heat off of my boy Emmett is I will give them a slam dunk case to where it's just so obvious that the simplest person will go, well, this is obviously how what happened here. Here's our guy. All the stuff's in the trunk and he's got the car and he's confessing to it. I mean, this thing was just laid out just so perfectly that anyone, simple-minded or not, and I think that's kind of where you're going with here is that no matter how simple-minded you are, you're still going to be like, well, how can we not think that this guy's the guy? He not only told us he did it, he's got all this stuff in his car. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Now, one of the things we could ask ourselves is, where the hell did Varga come up with this guy who was willing to lay down or, you know, to basically give up the rest of his life to put in prison to mm-hmm. go to prison? Now, I have to admit, I thought of one of my favorite movies.
What's that?
Oh, and of course, now I'm going drawing a blank here, but isn't that illegal? I hate when my mind does that.
You love it so much, the title doesn't even mean anything.
Shawshank Redemption. So I think of Shawshank Redemption. One of the things that I learned from that movie, many things I learned from that movie that I love so much, there's some of the things that I never thought about too much, is that if you've been in prison for a decent amount of time, you don't know how to live in the world again. And that's something I never really thought of. You know, like, I always thought if I went to jail for something, in prison for a while, for a long time, that the greatest moment of my life would be when I get let out. And then I saw that movie and I realized, yeah, it might really suck to no longer be in that world, prison meaning, anymore. And that maybe someone would do just about anything to get back in it. And it kind of alluded to that with about the fact that he had just gotten out of jail and was already having some trouble. So I feel like, you know, Varga found this guy. Now, granted, he found him pretty quickly, but he was able to find someone who was willing to take some kind of bribe. I mean, maybe he offered him, hey, I'll give your family some money or something. Maybe somebody out here in the world that he cared about, and Varga's going to take care of him if he takes a fall for him. But it was pretty impressive that he was able to find someone, though, so quickly to take a fall so they could get Emmett out.
I'm confused about the timing on this one as well, Jeremiah, because, I mean, so many questions with this. I feel like we're in the interrogation room here. Mirrors all on us. First, did Varga know that Emmett had gone to confess? I don't remember, honestly, from last episode if someone had tailed Emmett. If so, as you're alluding to, how in God's name was Varga able to bring together so many things so quickly, to find two other Stussies in the area, to procure the supplies, to find the fall man, who is Wu, Donald Wu, as you mentioned, the guy who ends up sort of getting blamed for these crimes. I'm more likely to believe, and again, this might be me going Chief Mo and going with the simpler explanation, but, you know, maybe Varga figured, you know, he had heard about the fact that, you know, Emmett had said that, you know, Gloria and Winnie had been sort of asking him questions, hounding him with him for the past few months. Maybe Varga decides, okay, once and for all, we're going to squash this thing. We're going to put it to bed, to use Gloria's turn of phrase, before the big reveal this episode. So he decides right there and then that he is going to set up this fake trail. It just so happens to coincide with Emmett's admittance of guilt. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, and he talks about different stages, too. Stage 4, stage 5. He's got all these stages. So I kind of think that maybe this was part of his stage anyway. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not, I do think, though, you have to think, you know, that Varga's been having Emmett and I mean, we know he was following Sai. I mean, I think he's been, you know, keeping close eye on these guys for a while, and I have a feeling he knew he went to see Gloria. I really do think he knew that. So he didn't know for sure what Emmett was going to be telling to the police, but he knew it wasn't good. So I don't know if that kind of speed things up, but I kind of agree with you. One of the things we learned so quickly about Varga, and Nikki so nicely pointed out later on in her conversation with him at the hotel, was that he is a very powerful man. He is the boss. He's not some middle management at this Norall company. He is the company. And he's obviously has ways to pull things off very impressively, pretty quickly. But I do think that maybe this was something he had worked up ever since Ray died. Ever since Emmett and the whole thing, I think he figured, I can utilize this somehow with the killing of, with Ray's death, to set up something further. So I kind of like this idea, Mike, that instead of us like all going, oh, how in the world did he come up with this in a matter of hours? How about the idea of that, you're right, he has always had this in the plans, in the works for a while. He just had to speed things up maybe a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Fargo is a show that's based all around coincidence. You know, Nikki's about to talk about the 58 octillion possible deals of things that may happen. Maybe it just so happens that one of these coincidences was that Emmett turned himself in right around this time that Varga was planting this false trail, and that, you know, Varga got very lucky in that, you know, had this not happened, had Emmett gotten processed or something, maybe things would go a little bit differently and he wouldn't have been able to pick up Emmett in his car. We're not entirely sure. But listeners, feel free to agree or disagree with me, but I'm personally of the mentality that I think this is a totally separate idea from Varga. This was not an immediate knee-jerk response to him finding out that Emmett turned himself in.
Yeah, I like that too. One of the questions we got from Brenda Fitzpatrick was that he feels like there was a missed opportunity for a major cameo to play Donald Wu. Did you have any idea who would you like to have? Now, the only problem is, of course, now we're throwing out, you know, some big bucks here to get a big name to play this fall guy. But did you have anybody in mind? I mean, they obviously have an Asian actor here. I don't know if it has to be that. Would you, what would you prefer?
I, I think it has to be, though. And that's the problem, is that, you know, when we first see Mimo go into Marvin Sussie's house in the very beginning, you know, and we see Donald Wu get arrested, they're wearing pretty much the same thing. And as unfortunate as this is to say, I feel like when you, if he gets caught, seen by a witness, and you're going to ask the witness, what do they look like? They'll say, you know, brown leather jacket, Asian man. And so you can't really, you know, if you pull over a white guy driving the maroon car, that's not necessarily going to be your fall guy. That being said, if we're going with Donald Wu, what about John Wu, a.k.a. was it, that's he played Harold in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. He played Sulu in the new Star Trek films. Granted, it's a 1 second cameo. I do not think we're going to see Donald Wu ever again. Seems like he's going to be processed and sent off for a very long time for multiple murders. But that could have been fun if they decided to, you know, divvy out the money for that.
Yeah. No, it could be funny is if we're trying to think of other Asian actors, like you could put somebody that would be in that role you would not expect, like a Jackie Chan who always plays a good guy, but now all of a sudden he's responsible for cutting the throats of all the beautiful, wonderful Stussies that live in the St. Cloud, Minnesota area. But yeah, I mean, no, that's a good pick. I like that.
I also probably correct myself. That was John Cho. I believe John Wu might be a film director, I think he is.
Oh, yes. That's actually, I think you're correct. Yeah, absolutely.
That could be, he could have made a good, you know, cameo as well. Again, it was literally 1 second. So, you know, we're not talking like the Sklar brothers on Better Call Saul this season.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, though, even for 1 second of scene, depending on the actor, I mean, they can still, you know, ask for a hefty price. Unless, of course, they're just really big fans of the Fargo franchise and would be willing to do it for a very minimal cost, which is always possible. But great question, Brendan Fitzpatrick. I don't know, Brendan, you never told us what you would like to see, my friend, who I guess I should have asked him on Twitter. But I'd be interested to see maybe, you know, if some of our listeners want to throw out some names. That sounds good to me. It's definitely fun to think about, but it was one of those things. It could have been a missed opportunity. I don't know, whatever. But you are correct. David is, or Donald Wu, I mean, is going to prison for a long time probably now. And I don't know. We'll see. Maybe he'll get out because obviously things are going to fall for when it comes to Vargas. I don't know. We'll see how this all plays out, but very interesting. So one of the things we kind of brushed over, now I did not like the smug look on Mo's face, by the way, when he realized that he's the man, he solved this crime. So that did bother me a little bit, Mike. Did that bother you at all?
I mean, it's typical Mo, so it's really par for the course for me. And again, it's very much in character that he's like, nope, you're wrong. I'm right. I was able to solve it through my methodologies. And, you know, I loved him walking in and saying, telling Gloria, you know what? Those are the facts. And Gloria replies with, I have my facts, which again ties into this whole idea of your truth versus the capital T truth. But, you know, it seems like Gloria has really been dealt one big bullet here. She's about to get another big bullet in the form of the Widow Goldfarb's really interesting alibi, which I think is a
very
good segue.
Interesting.
Because, I mean, Jeremiah, you were the one that really underlined this character when we last saw her a few episodes ago, and you were wondering, you know, did she have interest in them? What is she going to tell the cops? It seems like she has her own alibi. I don't know if Cy fed it to her or, you know, someone else did, but she seems to account for the fact that Emmett was with them at the restaurant the entire time.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure in the 3 months between if they're in business together. I guess that would make sense if she decides to work with them. But otherwise, I really do not see the motives of this character. Do you have a better understanding than I do?
No, the only thing I gathered from this entire sequence in this particular episode was more questions as far as what is the full story with going on with her, because clearly she's covering. I mean, obviously, I do think that she was a little surprised to find out that Emmett had showed up at the police station wanting to confess. So that definitely disturbed her a little bit. I do not feel like we were given enough to think that all of a sudden she is definitely working now for Emmett. And I'm confused because clearly something's going on. I mean, this so much suspicion is surrounding this character now. And I'm not quite sure where we're going to land with this person yet, because I wrote my notes. I'm like, is she still involved? How is she involved? What is going on? but something is definitely not quite right here with what we're hearing from Miss Goldfarb. I mean, there's something going on here. And I'm sure we probably will find out in the finale. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. She does come from my hometown, St. Louis.
Yeah. So that helps. We found a little bit more about her. I don't know. I'm going to take the opposite standpoint from you. I don't think we're going to find anything else out about Widow Goldfarb. And I would love to, but I don't know. I feel like, again, she's serving into this main thematic device of this idea of stories, that she's providing her own story and the assuming truth that comes along with it. That, you know, it seems like she appears so sporadically over the course of this season that I don't necessarily know if we need a closeout for her. Though I could be wrong. I don't know if LaRue Dollard would show up anytime after his couple of cameos, and here he is at the end of this episode. So I'm going to take the opposite viewpoint from you just for fun, just for divisiveness on this podcast, and I'll say that I think we're done with Goldfarb right now.
Well, that certainly could be the case. And one thing that we may look at back at it and just say it's one of these things that's simple, is that she did obviously have serious interest in taking over the Sussy company, which what we were told, and that it was just more simple for her to keep things going, you know, like hoping that maybe the deal could still happen, that it made more sense to her to cover for him as much as possible to make sure that, you know, this deal could still be on the table. You know what I'm saying? Because if Emmett goes to prison or jail for something, you know, that this is could completely kill things for her, and she's not going to be able to take over the Parking Lot Kings franchise and, you know, an empire. And I think that she obviously wants, I mean, she is a person of power and wealth, and she wants more of it. I mean, she this is made very clear to us. So it could be just something as simple as that.
I mean, it could be interesting as well in that, you know, maybe I go back on my word and somehow this does end in, like, you know, things fall apart, Emmett goes to jail, Varga dies, what have you, and then it ends up with Goldfarb absorbing the Stussy Corporation and taking over. It's almost like the end of Hamlet, where, you know, everyone essentially kills themselves. Who's left but Fortinbras, this random Norwegian king that I had mentioned a few times, sort of sweeps in at the very end and decides to take over the kingdom on his own. I could totally see that situation here, where Goldfarb is this very minor character on the fringe, but who still holds some power. And while the dust settles after everything, she has something that she can very much seize for her own taking.
Yeah. So we will see. The chapter could be closed for her, but it's hard to say, and we will obviously find out here very soon. Let's talk a little bit about this great scene between Varga and Swingo. That was just fantastic, right? The nice showdown. I mean, of course, we did get to see Varga eating Rocky Road on a toilet. I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, he's just skipping the middleman at this point. He's like, well, I know exactly where it's going, so I might as well just hang out here and camp out for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was so funny. I was reading Sepinwall's review last night, and I thought it was funny. He mentioned the SNL skit, John Hamm's Ham, about eating is so good, eating it on a toilet. And he started thinking, he mentioned this, I wonder if Varga's ever had some of John Hamm's Ham. I thought that was, I completely forgot about that. And even though I'm not a major SNL geek like you are, my friend, I, of course, as you can imagine, with my love affair for John Hamm, I've seen all of the SNLs involving John Hamm. How could I forget about John Hamm's Ham? But, yes, Swango and Varga, this was great. I mean, we had mentions of the death of a salesman even in this thing. We've had the two of them exchanging wits, you know. It's like one, you know, he mentions one thing and she goes, oh, yeah? Well, I'll, you know, I've got this in my pocket. I mean, it was just, it was great. I really enjoyed this. What about you?
Oh, this was so much fun. And again, I'll say off the top what I said a couple scenes ago, which is that this is not the showdown I expected to be. I totally thought it was going to be, you know, a matching of wits between Varga and Gloria. I do think that from the beginning, Nikki has shown herself to be a very capable and very quick thinking individual, but not someone to, you know, match up with the most slick person that we have seen since Lauren Malvo on this show. But what I love about it is that it was essentially a verbal bridge game. And Nikki sort of alludes to the fact that bridge does sort of have real life implications. She says it's not a game. There's 58 octillion possible deals. Then you got the human factor, symbiosis of your partner, the cheats and tells of your opponents, the strategy. I feel like the second to last thing that she just mentioned is very key here, because it's a very much a verbal game of bridge in that, as you said, they're sort of playing their own cards. Nikki says like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't bring the money. And Vargas says, okay, well, I didn't bring the money. And Nikki says like, well, if you gypped me, I'm going to, you know, rat you out. And he says, well, look around. And, you know, I think it's indeterminate whether or not he purposely stocked the bridge headquarters with men who were, you know, dressed in brown trench coats, or whether it's just a representation of how much of an everyman Varga looks. But he plays that card. Then we have the card of Mimo, you know, ready to take the shot with the rifle in the hotel room. But then Nikki plays the card of Wrench showing up behind him with the gun to Mimo's head. I'll admit, I'm a little surprised that Wrench didn't kill Mimo there, but I guess it's more of an intimidation tactic more than anything. But it was a lot of fun just to watch. Again, they're not doing anything. They're just sitting there making idle threats to each other while also Varga's making offers of employment at the same time, really trying to, again, use his ways of wealth to try to get into these simple-minded Midwesterners, even though Nikki's a little bit different. But this was just so fun because, again, outside of that, one random scene a few episodes ago where Gloria was in the Stussy headquarters and sort of like interviewed Varga and said like, who the heck are you, and wasn't believing his story. Nobody has spat up Varga's BS. Everybody swallowed it. Nikki's been the only person to throw it up essentially back into the toilet from whence it came. And that makes things so exciting for what's to come.
I love that analogy. And it's exactly where I was going with that in my mind, what I was thinking as well. And that's what made the whole thing so beautiful. Is that, and you could tell because the way he thinks about her throughout this entire sequence changes, you know, because he starts off by being slightly impressed, you know, because he starts with, you know, with zero, and then he doubles the zeros as he's getting more impressed, to the point at the end where he realizes he doesn't like her at all, because he realizes that this is someone unlike everyone else he's dealt with there in the Minnesota area. As it, like you had said, was able to completely debunk everything and throw it all back in his face. It was just fantastic. He realizes this is somebody he really overestimated big time, and it's just not going the way he would like. And I thought that just made it even that much more special. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Absolutely. And again, we're starting to see him kind of come apart at the seams. I think you legitimately see a momentary second of unsettling on David Thewlis's face when Nikki makes him realize, you know, that, you know, his setup wasn't good. He looks up at the hotel room and doesn't see Mimo there. And I think he realizes like, oh crap, I am dealing with someone much larger than I initially thought. Now, of course, we have an additional level on this in that, you know, Nikki is going to threaten to release the numbers. And again, this is a question of timing, but it seems like while this was all going on, she had already sent the financial forms to the IRS. So she was going to do it no matter what, whether or not she got $2 million out of it. And of course, we have this killer final exchange where Nikki flat out tells Varga that, you know, she wants to hurt him. She wants him to suffer. She wants to take something that he loves. In this case, I think I don't know if it's money or if it's power, either or. Varga is going to be in for a world of hurt very soon, by my estimation.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I kind of felt that way too when this thing's over, because I think this thing was all about just her showing. She just wanted to have the one-on-one and basically let him know that I'm here to take you down, and I just want you to know that. I mean, it was clear to me. She knows he's not going to just hand over $2 million. The whole thing was a bunch of BS. And you know, so she came up with this elaborate plan to basically show him that, you know, I'm as good, if not better than you, and I could take, and I'm going to take you out, and I'm going to make you pay so dearly for all the crap. And it was funny because he even likes, like, well, you know, I didn't, he starts getting defensive, like, I didn't kill Ray, you know, that was Emmett. And he's like, yeah, but were you the one about, you know, involving my arrest and trying to kill me in prison and with the truck? And I mean, she starts throwing all this stuff out, and he's defeated again. He's like, yeah, like he's like, yeah, that's me. You know, just it was all so great, and I thought it was wonderful, because I agree with you. I think she had already sent that stuff off. I 100% believe that. It's just pretty clear to me. She knew going all into this that he's not going to be what I want. I'm just going to take him out, and I just want him to know I'm going to do it, and there's nothing he could do about it.
Yeah, and I think, again, it goes back to what we sort of commended this episode on in the beginning, in really shading characters like Gloria and Emmett. I think they are shading Varga a little bit as well, in that, again, we've seen this really two-dimensional but still kind of a delicious performance of David Fulis here, but really no depth. He was all surface for a reason. He had a very big veneer. No veneers on his teeth, but a veneer in general. Now that veneer's slowly fading away, and I think we're really starting to see who he is when he's backed into a corner. And as we see on Fargo, when someone's backed into a corner, they don't necessarily behave in the nicest way. So we're starting to see a vulnerable Varga, and I'm hopeful that we're going to see more in the finale.
Yeah, I think so. It's probably going to get pretty ugly, and I can't wait to see how it plays out. But yeah, he is definitely brought in his most vulnerable we've seen him, and it will be fascinating to see how he reacts to this, because it's probably going to be pretty ugly. And oh man, but that was great stuff. I really enjoyed that. Now Gloria, of course, at this point is feeling pretty down. I mean, you know, things is quickly turned not in the direction she thought was going to, you know, and I really felt for her. But she really opens up there with Emmett, doesn't she, when she starts discussing her past and the things that happened to her. I love that line that she gives Emmett as she's, you know, letting him know that, hey, sorry, you're out of here, is that you think the world is something, and then it turns out to be something else. Mm-hmm. What a great line. This was another finishing out what we had gotten from the initial interview. And then we close it out with this. And it just was great stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To see.
And it's really interesting sort of charting Gloria's trajectory. You know, she has had moments of setback before. She flew out to L.A., for God's sake, only to find out that it was essentially all a crapshoot at the end of the day, that, you know, Anastasia had nothing to do with the murders at hand. But, you know, otherwise she's been pretty determined, very dogged to go down the path that she thinks is right. But she faces a major setback here, and we finally see her at her most vulnerable. And this is where I think she really opens up, where, you know, from the beginning we were like, oh, this is a really weird marital situation for Gloria. You know, she's divorced, her husband left her for a man, but she seems pretty amicable with everybody. And that turns out not to be the case. I think she's still extremely hurt by this idea that, you know, this is someone that she's essentially known and been with since she was 10 years old. And then all of a sudden her worldview changes over the course of one day.
Right.
And this, again, will tie into her very last comments to Winnie about how she feels ignored by the world in a way that she keeps trying to find her place. And really everyone either pushes her aside or completely ignores her. And that's definitely feeding into it. And it's so, I mean, Carrie Coon does a good job of playing sad, as bad as that is to say.
She does.
We really see her hurt here. And she's not unlike Sai with his myriad quotes about how, you know, the world is not the same, the map has changed, et cetera, et cetera. But again, in comparison to Gloria's last conversation with Nikki, she gives Emmett one more chance to say Varga's name, to say something to spur her down her path, to, you know, reinforce her beliefs. Ultimately, he chooses not to. Maybe it's just because he sort of realizes that, again, to quote Varga in episode one, you're trapped. You know, he realizes that due to this framing, there's really nothing he can do. Even confessing his crime is not going to help. So he decides, you know what, I might as well play ball again. Let me not give up his name. But man, in doing that, he leaves Gloria at the lowest point she's been in quite some time.
Yeah, she's at a very low point. But I mean, Emmett's, you know, obviously not at a great point in this part of the episode as well. You know, because, you know, during the interview, you remember he had made it so adamant about it, like, well, I'm here on my own. If anybody comes saying it or my lawyer, it's not my lawyer. You know, I think it's because Emmett, you know, he has to know that returning to his new brother, Mr. Varga, is not going to go well for him. And, you know, even in this scene when, you know, Gloria is like letting him know that, hey, this guy's come forward and admitted to killing all these people, and he has a lock solid alibi, or, you know, your alibi here is all lock solid, you're out of here, you know. And you could tell Emmett's like, I felt like he was almost terrified. And he looked kind of scared to go back and to get into that car, with Varga, right? I mean, he's got to know this is not going to go well for him. And I really think that by not saying something to Gloria, maybe a huge mistake here. But then again, the more I think about this, Mike, What if he does tell? Let's pretend for a second he tells Gloria who he thinks Varg is and what he's involved in. Is Gloria going to be able to do anything about it? I just, you know, you think about the situation she and no one there at the precinct, you know, takes her serious. I mean, obviously Chief Mo doesn't. I mean, I don't know what she'd be able to necessarily do at that point.
Mm. Yeah, no, Varg, it's a good question.
Powerful person. The only person that's going to take him out is the combination of what Nikki is doing to him and the IRS. I really do believe that. So I think poor Gloria may not have been able to do much in this particular situation, but maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, Emmett's decision not to turn in Varga at this point was fascinating, and she did. She gave him that opportunity, and he turned it down. And mm-hmm. I loved Mimo's smile coming on his face as soon as Emmett's back far enough behind him, and he was able to smile at Gloria like, ha ha ha, I was, I thought it was great.
Yeah, and then you get sort of on top of that, as soon as Emmett gets pushed into the car, what does Varga start doing? Start spewing out platitudes about how, you know, the problem is not that there's evil in the world, it's that there's good. Otherwise, who would care? Which, again, is, I feel like it's like an everlasting theme of Fargo, the series.
Yeah,
in that,
I think,
you know,
so.
It's about people doing really amoral or even evil activities. And, you know, were there not plucky cops that try to stop them, they would just keep doing what they're doing and the world keeps turning. But again, Varga's totally in sort of his salesman mode, even though he has momentarily been struck down by Nikki, he's still putting up that face in front of Emmett. The question is, you know, if and when Nikki starts making Varga come unglued, will he do that in front of Emmett? And I feel like I've also forgot about this. I think we still have the question as to whether or not Nikki and Wrench are responsible for sort of the mental warfare that happened to Emmett, in terms of, you know, stealing his car and replacing it with his brother's car, or, you know, putting up the stamps all around the office. I don't know if it was them or if it just happened to be somebody else.
Yeah, that's true. That was that mystery was not necessarily fully solved, but I think it's safe to say that it was probably them. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know.
They're meticulous enough, as is, you know, prevalent from the grenade truck jacking, that they could definitely have pulled it off.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, maybe we'll find out. Maybe she'll mention something about it. I'm not quite sure, but it is something that was not resolved very much. And I mean, we still don't even know the status of Cy. I guess at this point, we just assume he's still in the coma.
I don't know if he's ever coming out of the coma, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I think we mentioned that last podcast was that this is probably the end of Cy. So. Oh, poor guy. What a shame, right?
Ugh. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't know. Depending on what's about to befall some of our characters next episode, Cy might be lucky to be out of the fray, even though that means he grew a nice coma beard for a few months.
That's a good point. He might, if he does come out of it, he might be like, "Woo, glad I missed all that."
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guys, what'd I miss?
Oh, man. I guess this is, let's close things out with this beautiful scene between Gloria and Winnie, as they're sharing a drink. You know, obviously Gloria's down, but you know, Winnie finds a way to pick her up, not only just to pick her up in the moment, but to able to completely change everything, it seems like, for this character. Because now, after this loving hug that she gives her, she seems to be cured now, and she seems to be cured of not being seen, and was able to wash her hands and the sensors work for her. I know that I mentioned here that, you know, Brendan Fitzpatrick said is one of his favorite scenes from this particular season. I know I really enjoyed it. It was something I think I mentioned at the top of this podcast, how much I really felt like that we really needed this for this development of this character. I thought it was really, really wonderful. Mike, what else can we add about this that we really hadn't a chance to dig into yet?
It's only Winnie. Who would have known? She must be sure any apocalyptic events occurred. She can definitely hire herself out as some sort of big prophet that can heal everybody through hugs. I mean, again, it's so simple, but the beauty is almost in its simplicity. In that, you know, Gloria finally has been coming clean about all these feelings that she's kept bottled up. This idea that, you know, I'm like Minsky, the robot. I keep wanting to help people, but either they ignore me, or I end up, you know, not really doing anything, so therefore I must not exist. Almost like the opposite of Descartes' I think, therefore I am, which, you know, is that big political philosophy that essentially says, you know, you might not think that you exist, but in thinking you actually do exist. Gloria hasn't really read up on that, so she definitely is thinking, like, I must be invisible. But again, simple things like Winnie, you know, touching her and then eventually wrapping her into a hug and essentially telling her, you know, you are acknowledged, even though your husband has left you, even though your boss ignores everything you do, even though your teenager would rather go to the mall than go canoeing with you for the weekend, you still have at least one person who believes in you and trusts you, and that's me. And it's so interesting to almost compare it to the very first time we saw Winnie, where, again, on paper, she goes into this big monologue about her ovulation processes with her husband, and you're sort of like, okay, this is a kooky Fargo character, but she seems to have a much more of a cognitive brain than we initially thought. And it seems to be, again, the case here where, you know, she again is actually talking about the same subject, and then she ends up actually offering really sage advice and is the person to be there for Gloria at the end of the day. And you mentioned it before, you know, I think there were some people raising some eyebrows at this idea of, oh no, Gloria isn't being noticed by machines. Does that mean she's a ghost? Is she an alien? What does this mean? I think it's definitely representative in that, you know, as you said, once she gets hugged, once she gets acknowledged, so does the rest of the world in the form of these machines. So we have a Gloria with a sense of renewed confidence, knowing that the world does notice her and she's going to make sure that they notice her from now on.
Yeah, and that's what's so beautiful. This is so much better to have the meaning of, you know, because I know a lot of, even some of our listeners have brought this up. You know, a lot of people thought there was something big and important that we're missing when it comes to why she's being recognized by technology. But in the end, this is the best way to do this. And it was so well done. And I really, really liked it because, you know, I think we all kind of feel that way sometimes. I mean, maybe not all of us, but we do at times don't feel like we're being recognized or appreciated even sometimes or whatever it is. And it is nice to have someone, when you get vulnerable like she was and opens up to her and it spells out everything that we've been talking about, you know, like the whole, you know, sensors not working and people not taking, you know, she doesn't understand technology. I mean, she doesn't feel like she's part of the world doesn't really accept her quite the way. And having just that one person like let you know in your life, say, hey, I believe in you. I see you. You're here. You mean something, you know. And I think by doing that makes this whole thing just so much more satisfying for me as a viewer of the season. And I think they handled it very well. And I think that this going into the finale is going to show us that now that she is being recognized, right, and that she has that person who believes in her, and I do think that in the end what's going to be great is that she's still going to have a major involvement in the end of this thing. And I mean, whether it's she's, you know, probably going to be working with the IRS guy, I'm assuming, to help take Varga down. And I think that she will, in the end, have the last laugh to Chief Mo. Stick it, Chief Mo. You'll see.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think anything's going to... Chief Mo will not die, but I think
no.
Chief Mo might as well, you know, he might as well be dead, considering, like, I think it's going to be a fate worse than death from his point of view, in that he's going to be wrong, which I don't think Chief Mo is a guy who likes to be wrong. But yeah, I could totally see, I don't know if Gloria is going to continue to skirt her boss, but I think she may just, as you said, you know, maybe LaRue Dollard goes to her or she goes to him and they decide to work together to take down Varga. We get the shot of, like, Chief Mo just, like, incredulously shaking his head, like, I can't believe this. You actually figured it out. But again, as a huge Gloria fan, this makes me so happy. She's a character that had her big episode in episode 3, had her peaks here and there, but I mean, this was like her second biggest episode. And so this is really her rallying point for what is sure to be an explosive finale in more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even know where to begin. I mean, there's going to be probably so much to think about what could happen. And I don't want to, I could guess all I want, but I'd probably be wrong. I just know it's going to be pretty epic, and it's going to be great to see this final battle between Nikki and Varga and the IRS, and of course Gloria and Winnie taking this guy down. And it's going to be beautiful to watch. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we did forget. I know Fitzpatrick wanted to know, do we think that maybe Varga should have cut bail and got out. But that's just, I just don't think that's the kind of guy he is. I mean, yeah, in theory, he should have probably, he probably should get out at this point, you know, but I just don't see him doing that. Do you, Mike? I mean, he's, he doesn't, I think he still thinks he's pretty invincible, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is sort of, you brought up this quote before that Varga had about how he felt like, you know, he could easily work one over in this area because people from the Midwest are simple-minded. This is almost like a test for Varga, as if to say, like, hey, if you get worked over by these people, you really are not a businessman whatsoever. So I feel like there's so many reasons why Varga continues to frustratingly keep going down this trail, because I completely agree with Brenda. We even talked about this in the previous episode about, you know, why did Varga make Yuri and TJ Qualls essentially send them to their deaths by having them relentlessly pursue Nikki through the woods? You know, why not just like cut your losses? But it seems like Varga is all about no losses, is about, you know, taking as much as you possibly can, using whatever means you can. And it's going to end up being to his detriment, because I think the people that he is ultimately underestimated are going to come back and bite him in the butt.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. So that's going to be great to watch. Mike, anything else that we're missing? What are we, what, anything we need to probably close out here with? Or do you think we covered this? I think we covered this pretty well. It was a great conversation. I thought it was a very, very another well done episode, and I had a lot of fun talking about it with you. And thank you, Brenda Fitzpatrick, of course, our faithful listener who always gives us some great things to chew on. We appreciate that, Brendan Fitzpatrick. And of course, we also appreciate all of our listeners who, of course, been leaving comments for us on the iTunes page. Appreciate that. And of course, any time anyone wants to hit us up on Twitter to talk about any of these subjects, I know I'm always game for it. What about you, Mike?
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter. Jeremiah is at jpanhorst. I am at a Mike Bloom type. So, you know, thank you to Brendan. Brendan was someone who reached out to us via Twitter and asked us a couple of questions, especially with the finale coming up. Only one more episode, guys. So as you're watching it, feel free to reach out to us. We usually record 24 to 48 hours after the episode airs. So make sure you let us know. If you have longer term questions, longer than 140 characters, you can either put them in the Jay and Jack Facebook group if you're not a part of that. Some really great conversations going on over there. Or you can email us at fargowithmj@gmail.com. Again, that's fargowithmj@gmail.com. And just because there's only one episode left doesn't mean you can't not subscribe to our Fargo with Jeremiah and Mike feed. Just type in Fargo with Jeremiah and Mike in iTunes and we'll be there. And we appreciate any ratings or reviews you may leave as we head into the final of this third season of Fargo. And if you're not already, make sure you're checking out all the other great stuff on the Jay and Jack Network. I know I wrapped up The Leftovers with Jay and Jack last week. We've got The Broadcast, we've got The Ramblecast, we've got Owen and Baru's Barbecue, the Star Wars podcast going on. So much going on in the Jay and Jack Network over the summer. Be sure to check it out as Jeremiah and I start to see, you know, our own snow melting in a way. Fargo season 3 is coming to a close. I can't believe it's been a very quick 10 weeks, in my opinion.
It has been very quick to 10 weeks. But don't worry, FX has still got the snow going on because they got snow. Is it Snowfall? Is the name of the show that's coming out this summer that looks very good about the drug scenes from the 1980s? I am definitely going to check that out. So, but yeah, no, I know. It's flown by very fast, Mike. It's crazy to think, but hey, that's how it goes. And there's still other great content out there to consume, and like you said, excellent content to get your hands on here at the Jay and Jack Network. So plenty to listen to, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeremiah, thanks for having me on as per usual. I do agree that, you know, I do feel like especially the back half of this season has really been knocking it out of the park, and it really set things up for what's going to be hopefully a very exciting finale. I feel like we might need to talk about, you know, the future of Fargo after that. This might indeed be the last episode of Fargo ever. If
could
so,
be.
I'm confident that Noah Hawley is going to really take things out in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so, too. And, I mean, you know, we don't know the future holds yet for the Fargo franchise, but we will, you know, that will come out. And we could talk a little bit more about it, of course, in our final episode if we want to. But yeah, it's something to definitely think about. But this could be it. Hard to say. But I can't wait till next week, my friend, when me and you get together and talk about this potential final episode of the Fargo series. So you take care, my friend, until next week, all right?
Looking forward to it.